imagine I'm driving.
Yeah.
Okay.
And say lightning strikes my car.
Okay.
Welcome.
Would I be okay?
To Cinema Chop Shop.
Yes.
Because the tires
Watch,
are rubber.
Yes.
Shop.
And this is
retrofit.
Pertinent to the fact that about an hour ago, the sky turned black. All the birds flew away. The temperature dropped about 20 degrees. And we got quite the thunderstorm. So don't worry about it. If you hear thunder in the background, that's just the Garth Brooks concert next door. This is not a 25-year-old reference. Welcome to Season 7, Episode 10 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is
Travictor Travictoria, a.k.a. What did you do in the war, Travis?
Ah, okay. I will be your host, and I'm joined by co-host and co-producer Sean Deep, a.k.a. the Sean who loved women, a.k.a. Sean of the Pink Panther. And we are also joined, at least for the first half of today's show,
yes,
by Chop Shop regular, Breakfast at Chelsea's,
yes,
a.k.a. Chell Darlin, a.k.a. Inspector Chelso. Further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, Watch Chop Retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of the remake, reboot, sequel-dependent cinematic culture. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And we succeed more often than Blake Edwards.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Quick question. Do either of you have an example, a good example of a bad or unnecessary remake?
No.
No.
All right, my example this week is going to be 2014's RoboCop. Paul Verhoeven's 1987 movie is a dystopian sci-fi comedy action classic, but the remake lacks the sly wit of the original, and the title character looks more like a fancy-dressed Iron Man than Peter Weller's iconic cybernetic lawmaker.
Agreed.
All right, so that will bring us into our first segment, which is going to be movie news. And this is where throughout the week we pay attention to stories that we think are pertinent to the show and that our listeners might find interesting. And unfortunately, we do have to start it off with an RIP this week. British-American actress and jazz singer Annie Ross, who starred in The Wicker Man and Superman 3, has died at the age of 89 from emphysema and heart disease. And I sent this over to you, and your reply was, damn, she looked old in Superman 3.
Yeah, I would have pegged her for long since deceased, so rest in peace to her.
All right, then we've got Christopher Nolan's long-awaited Tenet is delayed indefinitely. Another victim of the pandemic, I'm sure. Right on the heels of our recast of An Officer and a Gentleman, I woke up Sunday morning, and guess who was on CBS Sunday morning?
Louis Gossett Jr.
Louis Gossett Jr., and he was speaking about the divide in our society, and he says, quote, we need each other quite desperately for our mutual salvation. And I was correct. He is the old man in Watchmen.
Correct.
All right. Breaking, Donald Glover is returning as Lando Calrissian for his own series. What do you guys think about that?
I'm so excited.
I'm excited, yeah, too.
He was the best part of Solo.
I think that Donald Glover's Lando is better than Billy Dee Williams' Lando.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, he's never done any malt liquor commercials.
That we know of.
Okay, sadder news. Corey Feldman steps down from sexual harassment committee after being accused of sexual harassment. And this is disappointing because for the past few years, he's been kind of a spokesperson for fighting against some of the systemic abuse in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's really sad.
Yeah.
And we'll finish it out on a lighter note. The most insane Christian movie starring Gary Busey as a Pomeranian you've ever seen. What is this, Sean?
It's something I read on cracked.com. It's a film that was produced on a very low budget by some very questionably talented people.
Okay.
And it stars Gary Busey, and he's brought back to life as a Pomeranian because he was mean to dogs when he was alive.
Okay. The character.
Yeah.
Okay.
The character.
Is he playing himself reincarnated as a...
No, I think he... I haven't seen the movie. I don't know. Yeah.
We just don't know.
And I don't want to know.
All right. And I think I hear someone clapping, so that must mean that it's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dane.
Ahoy, choppers! To counter the Air Force burns a bit, shout out to my very good friend who just retired from the Air Force as a lieutenant colonel after 21 years. Thank you for your service, Matt. And thank you for your service, Chelsea. The Sands of Iwo Jima came out in 1949. Flags of Our Fathers was released with Letters of Iwo Jima as a companion film. Letters was presented from the Japanese perspective. The kid stays in the picture guy is Robert Evans. I'm going to head to the rack and go watch some more NCIS New Orleans reruns. See you cake eaters next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. And we appreciate your diligence and your service as well. And I think the reason I was confused about Sands of Iwo Jima and Letters from Iwo Jima is because when I go to the beach, like Iwo Jima, I like to draw letters in the sand, namely S-O-S. That will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week. Which brings us to the theme of the episode. In celebration of his 98th birth date, July 26th, 1922, we're talking about Blake Edwards movies. William Blake Crump, better known by his stage name Blake Edwards, was an American filmmaker. Edwards began his career in the 1940s as an actor, but he soon began writing screenplays and radio scripts before turning to producing and directing in television and films. His best-known films include Breakfast at Tiffany's, Days of Wine and Roses, 10, Victor Victoria, and the hugely successful Pink Panther film series with British actor Peter Sellers. Often thought of as primarily a director of comedies, he has also directed several drama, musical, and detective films. Late in his career, he transitioned to writing, producing, and directing for theater. We should also note that he was married to Julie Andrews from 1969 until his death in 2010. What are some other things about Blake Edwards? What are some earmarks of his career?
He is seems to be really fascinated with depicting the behind-the-scenes nature of filmmaking,
okay,
and production and music making and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It plays a theme in quite a few of his films, and that's one aspect of film that, okay, I don't particularly care for. So immediately, right, I'm predisposed not to like him.
One thing I noticed is that he does a lot of tinkering with gender roles, sometimes to greater effect than others.
Yeah, and I will say this, especially the films that we kind of focused on this week, which were the ones produced in the 80s, very respectful to the LGBTQ community.
Right.
His depictions, mm-hmm, of gay characters are not
offensive.
Not typically flamboyant or effeminate. They're usually just regular people,
mm-hmm,
and it's kind of novel to see respect played to gay characters,
especially in
films,
that time period.
In that time period, exactly. You're talking about right before or right during the AIDS scare. So a, mm-hmm, lot of these, yeah, people were under the microscope and being pursued relentlessly. And he treated them with respect. And for that, I give him high marks.
And thoughts, Chelsea?
I just agree with everything you guys said.
Right. And so had you seen any of his films?
I've seen
Breakfast
a few.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan, right, of the ones that I have seen, but
it seems like even though he did have that kind of sensitivity towards the LGBTQ community, he also, a lot of the characters, a lot of the stories revolved around chauvinist characters.
Yeah, that's true too. But I wonder if he's casting them as a
version of himself,
that, or a foil, or, you know, a lot of times the more masculine characters have the farthest to fall in his films.
Yeah.
So that might be intentional. I don't know.
All right. That being said, should we go ahead and get into the Midnight Double Feature?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is where we go around the panel and we each talk about two films that we feel are related to each other, at least tangentially, and why they would be a good pairing for a double feature. And Sean, are you going first this week?
Yeah, I'll go first. I'm going to start this out with 1981's S.O.B.
Okay, I did see this.
And when I was a kid, this was a big deal on HBO because they hyped it as, you know, the first topless scene for Julie Andrews.
Right.
Boy, oh boy. It's a high price to pay to, right, see Julie Andrews topless. This film was really, really boring.
We should also point out about that topless scene that she doesn't want to do it, and they drug her.
They drug her to do it. Yeah, I was going to get into that. It's really about Richard Mulligan's character.
Uh-huh.
He is the famed director who has never had a flop, and they do this big, elaborate fantasy, family-friendly fantasy tale.
Uh-huh.
And the critics are saying this is going to lose so much money. And so Richard Mulligan kind of goes into this stupor for several days, and his friends are essentially partying at his house while he's out of it. And then it finally comes to him amidst all of this debauchery that people want sex, and he comes up with a great idea that maybe we can take the footage and splice in some erotic fantasy as well.
A la Caligula.
Yeah. And they have to convince, or try to convince, Julie Andrews to do the topless scene. I think she actually did agree to it, but then she kind of got stage fright.
Right.
That's when they drugged her with the weird doctor character.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my God, what a slog of a movie.
Yeah, it did take some determination to get through. I thought it was interesting because the whole time I'm thinking that the title is a reference to Son of a Bitch. And at the very least, Sumter Original Brewing.
Standard operating bullshit. Yeah, that was strange too. So I'm pairing that with 1986's A Fine Mess. And this is another Richard Mulligan film, even though he's not the star. This stars Ted Danson and Howie Mandel.
Okay.
And these guys were at the height of their powers.
At the height of their powers!
On NBC as Sam Malone on Cheers and Howie Mandel's doctor character on St. Elsewhere.
Okay.
So you had a lot of hype, I guess, probably around these two pairing up for a comedy. And it is a screwball comedy in the truest sense. It's just goofy and dumb. The actor... played by Ted Danson and Howie Mandel, the aspiring chef, they come up with a plot to get in on a horse race that's been fixed. These mafiosos are fixing a horse race, and they bet big and they win $10,000. But of course, collecting on that money is really tough, especially when the mafia is coming down on you because they know what you've done. And it's just a lot of pursuit and a lot of silliness back and forth, and they accidentally purchase a player piano at an auction.
Okay.
While they're trying to hide out from the hitmen.
Hmm.
And then the wife of the mafia don, unbeknownst to them, offers to buy the player piano. And, of course, Ted Danson has the hots for her, so there's a lot of complications and screwballness that go with it.
As a chef, I hope that Howie Mandel knows not to feed himself after midnight.
I will say that Maria Conchita Alonso plays the wife of the mafia don, so I thought that was kind of cool. But not a recommend on either of these movies for me.
All right, Chelsea, do you have a double feature for us?
Kind of.
Okay.
I would have had this as a double feature.
Uh-huh.
First is 1984's Mickey and Maude.
Okay.
I have never seen it.
I don't believe I have either.
Sounds really boring and really dumb. And so maybe skip that and just watch the second one, which is Harold and Maude.
Harold and Maude is good.
It's a great movie.
Nice. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my double feature is going to start in 1963 with the aforementioned The Pink Panther. It's got an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, of course, directed by Blake Edwards. It is the first film in the beloved comic series. Dashing European thief Sir Charles Lytton, played by David Niven, plans to steal a diamond, but he's not the only one with his eyes on the famous jewel known as the Pink Panther. His nephew George, Robert Wagner, also aims to make off with the gem, and to frame Charles for the crime. Blundering French police inspector Jacques Clouseau, played by Peter Sellers, intercedes, but finds his career and his freedom jeopardized. And so this was the beginning to the whole Pink Panther. And I think that the reason I'm going with the first film and then the second film is because it was before the whole thing got tired. They've really, really bled every last drop.
Wore it out.
So the second film is called A Shot in the Dark in 1964. And this and Inspector Clouseau are the only two Pink Panther movies that don't have the Pink Panther animated in the opening credits. A chambermaid at the Balin residence in Paris is accused of murdering her lover. Against the wishes of Chief Inspector Dreyfus, the infamous Clouseau is assigned to the case. Death follows the maid wherever she goes, yet Clouseau is stubbornly convinced of her innocence. So I think that if you're gonna... delve into Pink Panthers. If you're gonna delve into if you're going to delve into Pink Panther movies, start at the beginning, and the law of diminishing returns will probably play itself
crotch out. Deep in Pink Panthers.
Panther piss.
Wow.
All right, so yeah, that's my double feature, the Pink Panther and A Shot in the Dark, which brings us to the recast, right?
Yeah.
This is our feature segment where we take another film that is within the catalog of the filmmaker we're talking about or the genre or our subject, and we hypothetically recast a few of the lead roles. And the first one is going to be 10 from 1979.
George Weber is a successful songwriter.
Elevator music. I'm very big in elevators.
And everything is going his way. With friends who respect him. And a woman who loves him. He couldn't ask for more. But George is about to discover that even a man who has everything doesn't have everything.
She was the most beautiful girl I had ever seen.
There's nothing more exciting than a fantasy. It can give life a new meaning. And most of all, it can make a grown man act like a child.
I think you're gonna need a lawyer to help you with this one, Mr. Weber.
Yeah.
On a scale from 1 to 10, Blake Edwards presents a 10.
Whatever I was thinking wasn't anything special, and suddenly there she was, and I reacted.
You're becoming obsessed with a beautiful young girl.
Even though he doesn't know who she is or where she comes from, he'll cross the hottest sands, climb the highest mountains, sail the deepest seas.
Hero, Mexico.
And travel around the world to make his dream come true. Because on a scale from 1 to 10, George Weber is about to meet an 11.
Tonight, I spend with you.
Dudley Moore.
Sir, can I get you anything else?
George!
Julie Andrews.
George!
Introducing Bo Derek.
Did you ever do it to Ravel's Bolero?
In Blake Edwards, 10. A fantasy fulfilled for adults who can count.
It's got a 69% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Way too high.
Directed by, I think it's maybe the perfect number, though.
It is the perfect number for this movie. But
directed by Blake Edwards, a successful middle-aged Hollywood songwriter falls hopelessly in love with the woman of his dreams and even follows her and her new husband to their Mexican honeymoon resort. While his behavior seems sure to land him in trouble, out of the blue, fate plays into his hands. So we've got the Hollywood songwriter played by Dudley Moore, who was 44 at the time. The character's name is George Weber. George S. Weber. S is for stalker.
Yes.
Yes!
Then we've got Bo Derek, who was just 23 at the time. And she's playing Jenny Hanley. Jenny Hanley. He doesn't know her at all. He just sees her and he's like, oh, she's the one.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so creepy and stalkery.
Then we've got Julie Andrews, who was 44 at the time, playing his friend with benefits, Samantha Sam Taylor. Would that be an accurate characterization?
True love? I don't know.
Yeah. It.
She's the one who's actually good for him.
Yes. Right.
He can't see the forest for the trees. Then we've got Robert Weber, who was 55 at the time, playing Hugh, who was George's writing partner. The character of Dudley Moore is named George Weber, and then Robert Weber is the actor playing Hugh. So that could get confusing.
Get a little confusing. This is the first character I noticed, though, that he's a gay man,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But very much plays it right down the middle and respectful. I thought it was really well handled.
And I think that we both discovered something about this movie this week. You pointed out that you recognized Brian Dennehy just from his silhouette.
Oh, my God, yeah. The camera comes in from behind, and uh-huh. Brian Dennehy's the bartender at the resort in Mexico. And I'm like, that's Brian Dennehy.
Yes.
There is no way it's anyone else. And then, of course, Dee Wallace is in this as well. She's the mom from E.T.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
She was the lady that was hitting on Dudley at the bar.
Gotcha.
Somebody more age appropriate.
Uh-huh. And so I also said to you that I now realize the Tommy Boy connection.
Oh, yeah.
Because Brian Dennehy plays Chris Farley's father in Tommy Boy, and he's recently married to Bo Derek.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty clever and good on you for picking up on that.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into our recast. First up, we've got Dudley Moore, who was 44 at the time, and he's playing George Weber. Who do you got, Sean?
I went with a 46-year-old, and he's not British, but he has a bit of a British accent. He was in Men in Black 3.
Okay.
He was in Moana. He was in What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
And Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
It's the Kiwi actor, Jermaine Clement.
Jermaine. That's good, dude. That's a really good pick.
What's
his age now?
He's 46.
That's pretty spot on. Now, Chelsea, I know you don't have recasts for this, but you did have some thoughts on the film, right?
I did. When we were watching this, I watched it with Sean and Allie, and we took a tab of the amount of gay jokes, sexist jokes, and racist jokes.
Okay.
During the whole film.
How many were there?
There were 5 gay jokes.
Okay.
There were 7 sexist jokes, and there were 4 racist jokes. And
that's than 10?
These were pretty blatant. I let the little ones slide.
Gotcha. You were lenient. All right. Well, my actor for George Weber is 51 now. He was in the Underworld series. He's in Dr. Doolittle, the new one. He's in Passengers and Masters of Sex. His name is Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen is going to be my George Weber.
Ooh, that's good.
And in this picture, he's still with Sarah Silverman. All right, next we've got Bo Derek as Jenny Hanley. And I think in my review of this, I said there's a reason that every teenage boy had the Bo Derek running on the beach poster during the 80s.
Yeah. Just a beautiful, beautiful woman. Mm-hmm. Not a great actress, in my opinion.
No.
Rocking the cornrows, though.
That was pretty cool. I mean, iconic. But so finding an actress to fill those shoes is pretty tough.
Yes.
I went with a young actress who is pretty up and coming. She's only got 13 credits to her name. But she was in Hunted. She is in, actually, it was released in January. It's called Run, Sweetheart, Run.
Okay.
But she was most recently in that really awful Charlie's Angels reboot. It's Ella Balinska.
Ella Balinska.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can see some face value there.
A little ethnic swap, too, but I think she's just gorgeous.
Very pretty. All right. My actor is 28 now. She was in Ready or Not. She was in Smilf, Hollywood, and The Babysitter. Her name is Samara Weaving.
That's who I would have picked. That's exactly who I thought
of. Nice.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
All right.
And she can act. She can act.
She can
throw
act.
Down some right. acting.
She's got some acting chops.
Totally. Drink.
Drink.
Then we've got Julie Andrews playing Samantha Sam Taylor, and she is more age appropriate to Dudley Moore as well. She was 44 at the time. And Sean, who were you thinking about for this one?
I went with a 46-year-old English actress. She was in Tyrannosaur. She was in The Lobster. She was in Hot Fuzz.
Okay.
And The Favorite. I went with Olivia Colman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. She's on The Queen.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
Gotcha. And so two of those that you mentioned were Yorgos Lanthimos movies. Interesting. Okay. My Samantha Sam Taylor is 40 now, and she's primarily known as a singer, which fits with Julie Andrews, but she's also an actress who has appeared in Rollerball, Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, Get Him to the Greek. Her name is Pink.
Oh, cool.
I like it.
Pink is going to be my Julie Andrews.
I like it.
We got one more?
However, I don't think Pink would have taken Dudley Moore's bullshit.
No, she wouldn't have.
She would have kicked him the fuck out.
Uh-huh.
But that would have been a funnier movie.
Yeah.
Good point.
Comeuppance.
Finally, we've got Hugh, who is George's writing partner, and he was played by Robert Weber, who was 55 at the time. Who do you think for this one, Sean?
I went with a 56-year-old actor, and I could see him being a writing partner for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he's ever, he may not have played a gay character, but who cares?
Yeah.
He has been on Ray Donovan.
I like Ray Donovan.
He has been on Brockmire.
Okay.
He was in Mystery Men. He was in a show called Free Agents. But most people would know him from The Simpsons. I went with Hank Azaria.
Hank Azaria. For a second, I thought you were going to say his doppelganger, Marc Maron.
Ah.
I started watching Glow.
Oh, did you now?
I did.
Oh, it's so good.
All right. My actor is 64 now, and this is my favorite in this group of recasts. He has a very dignified presence. He was in Argo. He was in Trumbo. He was in Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad. His name is Bryan Cranston.
Oh, I love Cranston it.
Good pick. I like
oh,
that.
Oh, I love it yeah. so much.
They even have the same like lines right here, yes. like elongated dimples. So, final thoughts on 10, Chelsea?
I think you got to watch it literally for that scene. It's pretty iconic.
I think that you could watch it as a double feature with This is Spinal Tap because they take it to 11.
That's good.
I'm going to say not exactly a recommend, except for if you want to know what people are talking about
exactly.
when they reference. Also, did you notice that the music that kept playing was Ravel's Bolero?
Oh, yeah.
And she's later in a movie called Bolero.
She produced the movie Bolero.
It was directed by her husband, John Derek, right?
Yeah, it's basically softcore porn. It's Emmanuel come to America is what it is. Yes. It's awful.
All right, so is it time to head to intermission?
Sure.
But not before we say, let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves some
panther steaks.
Medium rare.
Pink inside.
Oh.
All right, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis. And I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under review.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it. And multiply
a podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show, don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right, welcome back, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during intermission. We went to pee in the yard, but we couldn't tell because it's flooded.
And so we went for a swim.
When we come back from intermission, what do we like to do, Sean?
Beer check-ins.
And you said you have one that's movie-themed?
Yeah, this is an unfiltered double IPA with citrus, centennial, and amarillo hops from Pontoon Brewing in Sandy Springs, Georgia, which is just north of Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Something Strange 3.
Oh, cool.
Check out this label.
Their labels are
iconic.
Oh, that is
awesome. So it's Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters totally. Reference. That's so cool.
However, the beer's not that great, but my mother happens to know the wife of one of the brewers. She worked with her at her former job, and apparently they got investors from China.
Really?
They approached them and flew them over to be their guests in China. And
damn.
Yeah. So I was like, apparently they've got some money pumping through this brewery.
While we taste that, check it out. You said it's a double IPA?
It's a double IPA, but the IBUs are only 30.
Yeah.
Which means they're using a lot of finishing hops.
I think it's all right.
Okay. You can.
You know me.
You can have some more.
Easy to please. All right. While we enjoy that, let's go ahead and talk about the 2020 movie marathon. And this is an exercise in endurance and fortitude where Sean, myself, Chelsea, and Andrew have been watching as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year. Now, they need to be movies that are new to us. And then we check them in online on Letterboxd and Twitter with the hashtag 2020 Movie Marathon. And mine are on the @CinemaChopShop handle. Chelsea?
Mine are on my phone in my OneNote app.
Nice. And Sean?
A windowless van.
Yes. And what is your first check-in going to be this week, Sean?
I'm going to keep it mostly on theme. Okay. I'm going to talk about Victor Victoria. That's number 266 for me.
Uh-huh.
While, again, in my review, I said the same thing about Edward's treatment of gay characters and gay issues. I thought was really well handled in this one, especially when you have such typically masculine characters in the movie.
James Garner,
yes. And, you know, James Garner having to question his sexuality throughout the film because for a while he thinks it is a man impersonating a woman, but he can't explain this attraction for her. But I also wanted to comment that I'm pretty sure that Arlene Sorkin took inspiration for her characterization of Harley Quinn on Batman the Animated Series from Leslie Ann Warren's characterization of Norma Cassidy.
Trendy travelers tend to talk of London, Paris, Rome, New York.
Okay.
Do you watch this week or did you?
Yeah, I watched it.
It sounds just like Harley Quinn. I mean,
interesting.
And I know she was doing a caricature of your typical 1920s, 1930s, you know, socialite girl from New York, but it was so eerily similar to Harley Quinn. I thought it was really funny. But interesting movie. Thought it was okay. Thought it was pretty cool. Again, for the same reasons, his treatment of sexuality was really ahead of its time.
Cutting edge.
Yeah.
All right. My first one is going to be number 251. And this is the perfect capper to our Navy movies week. I watched it after going home from recording that episode. It's called Greyhound from 2020. And it's the new Tom Hanks World War II Navy movie that's on Apple TV. And my review, Hank's the captain now.
No.
And I said it was a perfect capper to our Navy movies episode. Steady as you go. So the premise is you've got this captain played by Tom Hanks who has his first commission. He gets his first ship. And it is escorting a convoy of ships across the Atlantic Ocean. And they're being targeted by the Japanese and by the Germans during that process. And there's heavy casualties and damage. And it was pretty enthralling. I will also say that it's only about 92 minutes, which is uncharacteristic for a war epic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's my first check-in.
That's you. Chelsea, did you have any?
Yeah, I forgot to write two down on my list, so this is really exciting. I'm on 207.
Ooh.
It's the first time I've been ahead.
You're ahead of the day.
Yes.
Very nice.
Nice.
And so I watched this documentary called The Last Breath on Netflix, and it's about these deep-sea divers, and they do, like, construction or something underwater, and this dive goes horribly wrong.
Okay.
And they're, like, English and Scottish. It's in the North Sea or something. And I don't really want to give anything away because it kind of toys with you a little bit. They don't really tell you the whole story right out the gate. And you think it's one thing when really it's another. And I screamed by the end of this movie. They surprised me.
Awesome.
It was fun.
A pleasant surprise.
Yes.
All right. So I should mention, you were saying that you're one ahead of the date. As of this recording, it is the 206th day of the year, and I'm on 259. Sean, what are you on?
Oh, I just said it. 266.
266.
Even though my Twitter feed says 166.
Oh, well, well.
All right, whose turn is it?
It's mine. All right, so this is probably my favorite of the Blake Edwards films that I saw. This is from 1991. It's called Switch, and it stars Ellen Barkin and Jimmy Smits.
Okay.
And it starts out with this guy. He's like a total male chauvinist, again, a theme for Blake Edwards. And JoBeth Williams is in it.
Nice.
And oh, I bet you were happy.
She looked so early 90s, it was not a good look for her. But she and two of her girlfriends lure this guy who has slept with all three of them to a hot tub where they attempt to murder him.
Oh, wow.
They drown him.
Damn.
And he comes back, and JoBeth Williams has a revolver and shoots and kills him. He goes to heaven-ish, where God is a male-female voice. Mm-hmm. It's like both voices, okay, male and female. And they say, you know, you've done a lot of good things, but you've also done some really crummy things. So we're going to send you back to Earth, and you need to make a woman love you unconditionally for who you are. The devil steps in and says, I want to make this interesting. He makes him a woman. So he comes back in the body of Ellen Barkin, and Ellen Barkin fucking kills it.
She's the best.
She, her performance of being a dude is so God-blessed good.
Uh-huh.
I was laughing at the screen so loud, and I was just like, this is great. This is, and I give all the credit to Ellen Barkin more than anybody else. Through it all, you know, explores her sexuality. There's a cool lesbian scene between her and Lorraine Bracco.
Hey.
Oh, wow.
Hey. And anyway, I'm not going to give away the twist ending,
it's scissoring.
No, it's not scissoring. No, but anyway, it's a cool movie. And again, another of my high marks for Blake Edwards, you know, for 1991, again, handling of gender issues is really ahead of its time. So good for him.
Nice. All right. My next one is going to be one that I think you saw as well, Chelsea. Number 253, Troop Zero.
Yes,
from
so
2019, it just showed up on Amazon Prime one morning, and I was like, what are we going to do today, honey?
It's been there for a while.
I guess we're watching Troop Zero, and it is about a motley crew of young scouts led by Viola Davis and somewhat by Jim Gaffigan. He's a lawyer who's not always around or the most responsible person. And then also the great Allison Janney. As kind of the antagonist of the film.
Yes.
I really, really liked it. It's kind of like if you took Troop Beverly Hills and flipped it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So my official review, absolutely beautiful, offbeat family comedy about a motley crew of young scouts led by those actors that I just mentioned.
Cool.
Anything else, Chelsea?
No, it's just a feel-good movie.
Yeah.
You have to watch it. My next check-in is another documentary. It's called Showbiz Kids.
Okay.
It's basically just interviewing child actors.
Later in life.
Yeah, but like from the 80s, 90s, and like kind of early 2000s, and just sort of their experiences and how it's kind of difficult. And some of them were problematic, like growing up. Some of them not so much. It was just interesting.
Hashtag free Britney.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, she came up in it.
Yeah, she did.
My favorite part, though, was when Todd Bridges said the one thing that I've always said was, can you believe I'm the one that lived?
Yeah.
One quick thing about Troop Zero, I felt that it had a little bit of a Little Miss Sunshine vibe, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Speaking of child actors.
Last check-in of the week, The Other Lamb.
Wow.
Okay, tell me about it.
Oh, my God.
If you've ever wanted to see a cult movie as if Eddie Vedder started a sex cult in the hills of Oregon.
What?
And the lead young lady looks like a female Harry Potter. This is the movie for you.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
What year?
This is a new release.
Yeah.
I believe it's 2019.
It's called The Other Lamb?
The Other Lamb.
Okay.
It's Huseman.
Michael.
Michael Huseman, who is in... The Haunted House movie. Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is the sex cult leader, and it's all women. There are no men in this cult.
At all.
You have the mothers who wear...
The wives who wear red, and the daughters who wear blue.
Blue.
Okay.
And he is leading them, and they end up getting turned out because the cops show up and say, you got to get out of here. So they go on a quest by foot to go find a new place to hang. And through it all, the wheels kind of fall off.
Yeah.
Things go south in a hurry, and our main character, who remarkably looks like a female Harry Potter.
But, like, still really still
pretty. Danielle Radcliffe.
She's still very pretty, don't get me wrong, but every time you look at her, I mean, she has the scowl.
Yes.
And it's even in, the, like, the poster. You're like, that's Danielle Radcliffe with makeup. The wig.
Yeah.
Mary anyway, Potter.
So she and one of the mothers who has the wives has been kind of put out on the fringe because she's unclean or
they
damaged they're, goods.
They're on their periods.
She kind of peels back the curtain a little bit for the young girl, the main mm-hmm. character, and she begins to see
well,
things
she
aren't
already,
really quite right.
She already kind of starts to see the bullshit
yeah.
and ask questions.
But, it has a really, really visceral and satisfying payoff at the end
oh,
of the
God.
Film.
Okay. I wrote it down. I'm going to check
and
it out.
And it's creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy
is
it
vibes.
Is it mm-hmm. long?
No.
Okay,
no.
cool. All right, I've got one more. It is going to be number 258, Susie Q. This is a 2019 documentary about Susie Quattro, who was a trailblazer in female rock and roll. She influenced Joan Jett and Debbie Harry and is still kicking ass.
Cool. I've seen her in a few documentaries.
Yeah.
She is a badass.
Cool lady.
Chelsea, do you have a final?
No, I okay. just piggybacked on yours. Sorry.
Hey, Travis.
Yes.
You want some BDSM?
Brian Doyle Susan Murray.
It is a Belgian dark ale from a Crafty Bastard Brewery in Knoxville.
All right. And who's the brewery?
Crafty Bastard.
Crafty Bastard.
These are the ones who had a... Oh, actually, I didn't bring it to the podcast, unfortunately.
Pickle beer.
They had an awesome pickle beer. Grabbed a crawler of that.
It was good.
And opened that in the beer garden the other night.
One of the Seminar Brewing fans and enthusiasts has been ranting about pickle beer. Mark.
I agree. It was good. It's a goza, so you naturally have the saltiness. Uh-huh. And I guess you just kind of kick it up with some dill.
Yeah, I actually like the idea of it. I'm a pickle fan. My lovely wife, Michelle, not so much. She can go for like bread and butter pickles or sweet pickles.
Well, see, I'm the same way. I'm not a pickle fan. Uh-huh. I loved this beer. I thought it was great.
Cool.
This is not, however, that great.
I didn't think it would be, but the name is wonderful.
It's worth it.
Belgian dark strong ale. It should have more candy sugar flavor, mm-hmm. and it does not. It's missing a certain amount of richness in the body, but yeah. it is a hefty 9.6%.
You know what I would have called it? Safe word. All right. So while we enjoy that, Chelsea, are you sticking around?
Oh no, I gotta go in a minute.
Got to go do some big.
Are you just gonna yeah. get up and leave?
I'll say bye.
All right. So
peace out.
While we are trying that, I think it's time to get into the recast continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
Redux.
And this one we have vastly different opinions on. I kind of love this movie, and you hate it.
I do not like this movie.
And we're talking about a film from 1987 called Blind Date.
Less than 12 hours ago, this man had a good job and a promising future. Last night, he went on a blind date. Today, he's paying the price.
You're allowed 2 phone calls.
Hey, Ted, it's me. Walter. Your brother, Walter. And I'm just calling to thank you for fixing me up with Nadia last night. And she's gorgeous. Oh, you were right about not letting her drink. It was really cute how a little champagne brought out those charming quirks in her personality. Walter, what? She made quite an impression on my boss, too.
I'm fired.
Fired?
But you know what really elevated the evening out of the realm of the ordinary? Having Nadia's psychotic ex-boyfriend as a chaperone.
You son of a bitch!
And you know those dancing lessons we had to take in junior high, Teddy? Finally came in handy.
Dance! Moonwalk! I hate that!
In fact, my evening was so entertaining, so exhilarating, so stimulating, such an utterly unforgettable experience that if I weren't already behind bars, I'd be committing a murder right now! Yours!
Kim Basinger, Bruce Willis, Blind Date.
Anybody out there got 10 grand for bail?
And so I was 7 years old when this came out, watched it on VHS many, many times, and like I said, I love it. I love
The unhinged performances all around. Everybody except for the judge father completely loses their shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about the premise. We've got bachelor Walter Davis, played by Bruce Willis, is set up with his sister-in-law's pretty cousin, Nadia Gates, played by Kim Basinger. A seemingly average blind date turns into a chaotic night on the town. Walter's brother, Ted, played by the late, great Phil Hartman, tells him not to let Nadia drink alcohol, but he dismisses the warning, and her behavior gets increasingly wild. Now, we should say, he warns her not to let her have alcohol, but he says it in that Phil Hartman
yeah,
way.
Yeah, he said she loses control.
Yeah, yeah, he really entices him to do it. She gets wild.
And so Walter and Nadia's numerous incidents are made even worse as her former lover, David, played by John Larroquette, so many times in this movie, he just screams, "I'll kill you!" That was great. And he also keeps using the term drill instead of like have sex. Are you drilling her? Okay. So the two lead roles were originally offered to Madonna and Sean Penn, who were recently married. And they were a little bit iffy about it because there was no director signed on. And then whenever they hired Blake Edwards, they knew for sure they didn't want to do it.
So, now you like this movie. What was your favorite part? What did you enjoy about it?
I like it when the car crashes into the paint store and then into the pet shop. I like it when the dad is out front in the middle of the night and he's like, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm planting corn." I like how Nadia, well, Kim Basinger has always been one of my favorites also. And seeing her transformation, her Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde it up in this movie, I thought was great. I'd tell you what I don't like is how smug Bruce Willis is.
But that's his default mode.
Yeah. Especially at the end, no spoilers, but when he comes out of the guest house, he only says one word. Yo. All right, so let's get into the roles, right?
Sure.
We've got Walter Davis, played by Bruce Willis, who was 32 at the time. We've got Nadia Gates, played by Kim Basinger, who was 34 at the time. We've got David Bedford, played by John Larroquette, who was 40 at the time. And then we've got Ted Davis, played by Phil Hartman, 39 at the time. And we didn't get to recast him today, but John Larroquette's father, the judge in this, I'm forgetting his name, is it like Metcalf or something like that, was very good at his deadpan.
Oh, totally. Delivery. Totally deadpan.
All right, so first we've got Walter Davis, played by Bruce Willis, 32 at the time. Sean?
I wanted to go with a handsome guy who can do comedy, and he sold me on one of his recent performances I watched. You might know him from the series Looking. Probably not. You might know him from the Disney series Frozen. You might know him from Mindhunter, but you'll definitely know him as King George from Hamilton and with Jonathan Groff.
Okay.
I love him.
Yeah, I do know him mostly from Mindhunter, but he's now that you Glee. Mention it, he was in Hamilton too.
Yeah, he was so freaking funny.
Hamilton 2, the sequel.
So listen, I have to peace out.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us for Thanks as long for as you could. Me. And get to work.
I will.
All right. So my Walter Davis is 32 now. He was in The Vampire Diaries, Chicago Fire, and Piranha 3D. His name is Stephen R. McQueen. Stephen R. McQueen. Not to be confused with the actor Steve McQueen or the director Steve McQueen.
Okay.
All right. So then we've got Nadia Gates, played by Kim Basinger. Oh, another part that I like is at the dinner party when she convinces the Japanese businessman's wife to divorce him because she can get 50% according to California law. She's dressed like a geisha girl and she's pretending not to speak English until Kim Basinger says 50%. And then she comes out and she's like, "Oh." You're Nadia Gates, Sean.
All right, so 34 years old at the time, with a 33-year-old actress. And this is kind of a bit of a tease for next week's episode.
Oh no.
You might know her from Arrow, the TV series. You might know her from Click or When a Stranger Calls, but you might also know her from the most recent remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Ah.
I went with Katie Cassidy.
Katie Cassidy.
David Cassidy's daughter.
No shit.
No shit.
Wow.
Okay, F off, because I've used her so many times.
Oh, really?
Yes!
I thought you were leaving.
I had you muted, by the way.
Fuck you.
Bye, Chelsea.
Bye.
All right, my actress is 29 now, and I think she's got a little bit of a Kim Basinger quality. And she definitely doesn't mind getting naked. She was in Silver Linings Playbook, Winter's Bone, and Red Sparrow. It's J-Law, Jennifer Lawrence.
Very nice.
Jennifer Lawrence is going to be my Nadia Gates. And you can kind of see her going off the rails, too.
Speaking of Winter's Bone, what was the movie I watched recently that had my good friend Dale Dickey in it?
I saw it as well, and I'm trying to remember.
Oh, Palm Springs.
Palm Springs.
She was great in Palm Springs.
Love that movie.
It was a good movie. I really enjoyed it.
I really liked it. I made Michelle watch it with me twice. Like, I watched it, and then I made her watch it with me, and I might watch it again. Tomorrow, and then the next day, and then the next day, and then the next day.
You know, I've recast Krista Milioti.
That's the girl in it?
Several times. I've recast her several times because I liked her.
Couldn't quite remember her name when I was describing it to somebody.
Yeah, I liked her in How I Met Your Mother.
Okay. All right, next we've got Davis Bedford. He's a lawyer, and he is Nadia's ex-lover who will not give up the ghost. And he basically stalks them all around town while while things are escalating for them. His point of view is also escalating. He's getting more and more aggravated and more, like I said, unhinged.
Yeah, unhinged and a bit of an asshole, too.
John Larroquette was 40 at the time. Who do you have for this one, Sean?
I went with another 40-year-old actor, although he'll be 41 at the end of the month. And he has played a bit of the sleazy asshole kind of lurking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Knocked Up.
Okay.
He was in Saving Mr. Banks. He was in Inglourious Bastards. But most would know him as Ryan from The Office. I went with B.J. Novak.
Oh, B.J. Novak. That's an interesting choice.
I could see him getting completely unhinged.
Yeah. Something about his character on The Office. They were always like backhand insulting him.
Oh, yeah. But he was always scheming for something better and it always backfired.
Wasn't he
on
also
him.
A writer on the show?
Oh, yeah,
though?
Yeah, yeah. He's more of a behind the scenes guy now.
Very funny. All right. My Davis Bedford is 39 now. He was in Black Snake Moan. He was in Southland Tales, Alpha Dog, and The Social Network. It's JT.
Oh, nice.
Justin Timberlake.
I can see that. That's
and his,
cool.
In this particular picture of him, he looks quite crazed. Next, the late, great Phil Hartman, who was 39 at the time, playing Ted Davis, the brother of Walter Davis. Who did you pick for this? I said he's 39, right?
Yeah, I'm with a 38-year-old, and I'm kind of pivoting off of my B.J. Novak pick from The Office, and I went with a companion-type show. From NBC.
Okay.
You would know him from Space Force.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the upcoming MODOK TV series on Disney, whatever it is, this week. He was in Sonic the Hedgehog, but you'll know him from Parks and Rec as John Ralphio with Ben Schwartz.
Interesting. Interesting choice. I saw him, and I did shop him, but I didn't chop him. However, my pick has something in common with yours. Oh, he's 46 now. He's in the TV show Westworld. He was in X-Men. He was in the remake of Straw Dogs. And a movie that was shelved for a really long time, but I kind of like, called Accidental Love.
Okay.
His name is James Marsden.
Oh, cool.
James Marsden. And what was the thing that you said, John Ralphio?
John Ralphio.
What was his credits that you just said?
Oh, it was in Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog, yeah. As James Marsden is also in the Hedgehog. All right, so I think that we know which way we're going to go on recommends for this. I am going to recommend it.
Yeah, I didn't like it when I saw it when I was, you know, a kid.
Yeah.
I don't really like it now.
Fair enough. I hear that people who listen to these things like it when we disagree.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it.
All right, so that brings us to our bonus segment, right?
Yeah.
And once again, we've got another battle royale this week between Blake Edwards, Anthony Edwards, and Edward the Longshanks.
What?
Edward the Longshanks, also known as Edward I, King of England, and featured prominently in the Mel Gibson movie Braveheart.
So he was real.
Oh, he was real. Yeah, and brutal.
Well, I'm going to go with that guy.
Okay.
Because Goose dies.
Goose dies.
Even though Anthony Edwards does save some lives in the hospital. Blake Edwards, just even after all the high marks I give him for his handling of sexuality, I'm not a fan of his films. So yeah, I'm going to go with Mr. Longshanks.
And he dies too, Blake Edwards. I'm going with Anthony Edwards because the goose is loose. All right. So with that, we want to go ahead and wrap up. I already thanked Chelsea for being here. That was nice of her to come and join us for a little bit. I want to thank you, sir, for everything that you do week in and week out. The engineer, my co-producer and co-host. Anything you want to plug this week, sir?
We'll just plug next week's episode and trivia.
Uh-huh.
Right answers with wrong Travis.
And do you know what next week's episode is?
Boy, do I. It's the Wes Craven episode.
And we are going to be joined by a special guest.
Thank goodness.
Joey Poo.
Jay Poo has been released from social isolation.
Uh-huh.
I expect him to come in like with hair down to his waist.
Oh, yeah.
With like a giant long beard with birds nested in it.
Denim jacket with the sleeves ripped off.
Yes.
No shirt on underneath that.
I would be very happy if that really was a thing.
We're all gay for Joey Poole. And so, in celebration of his 81st birth date, RIP, films of Wes Craven. He was born on August 2nd, 1939. And I've got a sneak preview question and answer for this week's upcoming trivia. The real Elm Street, is located in Potsdam, New York, a small town just south of the Canadian border. Canada! And Craven worked as a campus radio DJ and was a professor at Clarkson College, also in Potsdam. What was Craven a professor of?
Geography.
No, but it is a broad subject.
Humanities.
Humanities is correct, sir.
God,
humanities is correct.
It.
We want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on your podcatcher apps. We are online on podbean.com. We're Cinema Chop Shop on there. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter and facebook.com/CinemaChopShop. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And the beers that we checked in today will be on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there as well. Finally, farewell. Thank you to you, the listeners. And please remember to
watch chop, retrofit.